Christmas will see you there. Yes, it's Christmas. I have to confess to being a Christmas junkie. As a person of faith who, in my particular case, is Christian, I consider the story of the birth of Jesus to be filled with wonder and mystery. The holidays bring out the little kid in me, but the holidays also just bum me out. It's unimaginable that a nation of believers who collectively turned this humble but awesome story into such a spectacle could embrace this story and yet allow our society to turn its back on our children. That is what we are doing. Far too many children are poor. Far too many are homeless. Far too many lack health insurance, at least for now. Far too many lack parents who see that education can be the ticket to a better life. I'm Alan Jennings, and by vocation and by the work that I love to do, I am the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. I also have the privilege, thanks to my friends here at WDIY, listener-supported community public radio, to have this opportunity at least once a month to bring to you the important public affairs issues of our time. Tonight, as I've done before during the Christmas season, we're going to talk about our children. The problem is my two guests are stuck in traffic. Now, you know, most of us hate traffic, but if you're an economic development and a community development kind of person, traffic speaks to a robust economy, more and more activity, more business, and it is a good thing. Might drive you nuts, but it's a good thing, at least in the cities. It's just not a good thing in the suburbs because in either event, it means congestion due to too much activity. So I think in the case of the south side of Bethlehem where we are located, it's a good thing to see this kind of traffic. The problem is, you know, there's this Jennings corollary to the Murphy's Law. It is that the later you are, the slower the people in front of you will be going. In this case, it's traffic. So in walks my old friend Jane Irvin, who is the first of two of my guests tonight. Marcy Ronald will catch up to us as soon as she gets here. Jane Irvin should be known to many of our listeners, since WDIY's listeners are the smartest listeners in the Lehigh Valley. They know their stuff. And so people would recognize Jane Irvin. Let's see, if you played soccer anytime, you know, if you're anywhere between the ages of about maybe 15 and 50, you may have played soccer with the ultimate soccer mom, Jane Irvin. Her next chapter was as a county commissioner in Lehigh County and eventually county executive, where, in my opinion, she did some pretty bold things, kind of things that would cost her a primary election in today's day and age, but it cost her a general election in those days. And today, Jane Irvin is, I think appropriately, because she was always an advocate for children, the head of Community Services for Children, which does a whole series of things, including running the Head Start program. Jane Irvin, welcome.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for your patience as I fought my way through the Bethlehem traffic today.
How's your heart rate? Are you okay?
I'm good, good, good.
Did you run up the steps, or did you get the elevator?
No, I took the elevator. I didn't think showing up on the radio breathless was a good thing.
Yeah, I've done it. Ed Pulaski, I think, every time he comes on the show is breathless because he's late for everything. Marcy Ronald will be joining us shortly. She's vice president in charge of community impact, which sounds like a really cool job title at the United Way, and she will be here shortly. Jane, Let's start by giving you an opportunity to give the maybe 10-story elevator explanation of what Community Services for Children does.
Great, Alan, thanks. Community Services for Children operates three basic programs across the northeastern part of Pennsylvania. We operate the Head Start and Early Head Start programs in the Lehigh Valley.
Is that one or two of those three?
That's one.
Okay.
Okay. And we serve approximately 1,200 children each year in those preschool and home visiting programs. And these kids are all low income, and they're all between the ages of 0 and 5 years old. The second major business is the Keystone Stars program. All of the child care operations can choose to become part of the STARS system, which is a quality rating system for child care operations. And the goal here is to improve the quality of the education that the children are receiving while they're in child care. So a child care organization can qualify to be either a STAR level 1, 2, 3, or 4. And of course, the higher the STAR level, the higher the quality of the education that the children are receiving in that care. Oh. And we do that in 18 counties in northeastern Pennsylvania. We work with well over 900 child care providers.
How long have you been doing that? I didn't know about that one.
That program is 10 years old. It's a statewide program, and it's 10 years old.
Huh. Okay.
And the third program we operate is called the Subsidized Child Care Program for Lehigh County. So we provide guidance for working parents who need help paying for childcare. We help them choose their childcare provider, and then we pay the subsidized part directly to the childcare provider. And in that case, we will have in the neighborhood of 5,000 children in subsidized childcare at any one time.
Okay, and let's just talk about the scope of your organization. How many employees do you have?
About 300 employees.
And your budget?
Our budget is in the neighborhood of $41 million.
That's phenomenal.
We bring a lot of state and federal funding into the Lehigh Valley. And what we do is use that funding in order to educate young children who otherwise really are way behind their peers. When kids grow up in poverty, the stress levels, the stress that they're under, actually affects their brains. And so they develop more slowly than their more middle-class peers. So what we do is we help them overcome the impact of poverty in their lives by providing very high-quality early learning opportunities for these kids. In some cases, they're babies from 0 to 3 years old, and we visit the families in their homes, and we work with the parents to teach them how to be good parents, how to educate their children at home. And then we operate preschool classrooms for 4 and 5 year olds, 3, 4, and 5 year olds. And we do that in partnership with the IUs, in partnership with 5 different school districts. In some cases, we have the preschool classrooms right in the elementary schools that the kids will eventually attend. So in that case, the kids are getting high quality education and life skills every day.
Just in the interest of disclosure, I had nothing to do with it, but the CACLV actually created Head Start of the Lehigh Valley in 1964 or 65. Your predecessor, Pat Levin, was actually originally an employee of CACLV, and we were stupid enough to spin it off because if we hadn't done that, I'd be running a $60 million organization instead of my pathetic little $20 million organization.
Well, you do an awful lot of good work with your budget.
I'd have 400 employees instead of 100 and all kinds of good stuff like that. Let me just make sure, as we're waiting for Marcy Ronald, that, mm-hmm. that people understand the families whose children are coming to you are required to be actively engaged in their children's involvement in the Head Start program.
The parent part of our operation is critically important. The getting parents are their first and most important teachers of their children. So our goal is to get our parents, the parents of these kids, to understand the impact that they have on their children for their entire lives, and then to do a really, really good job of raising those kids. And we also teach them how to be advocates. You know, sometimes parents, some of these parents had pretty bad experiences themselves when they were in school. And so they're not very comfortable when their kids go to school, talking to the principal, talking to their child's classroom teacher. So we give them a lot of confidence and really help them learn how to be advocates for their kids. Pay attention, make sure they have places to do homework and that sort of thing. Even though when we're working with them, their kids are little, 3, 4, or 5 years old, but they're going to go into the public schools. And if you ask any kindergarten teacher in the community, they'll say they can tell kids who have been in Head Start from those who haven't.
Quickly, before we go to a break, do you know enough about the circumstances of the kids? I mean, do you know what percentage of them, for example, are on welfare versus, just their parents are unfortunate enough to have skills that are not worth a whole lot in this economy? They're working, but still poor. Do you have any kind of breakdown of that off the top of your head?
What we do know is in order to be in the Head Start program, there is an income requirement, and it has to be below 100% of poverty. $22,000 a year for a family of four. I'm sure you are well aware of that. About 4% of our children are homeless, and we take children with the highest needs first. Our waiting list isn't a first-on, first-served. It's who has the highest need. So homeless children are always admitted.
It looks like the late Marcy Ronald is just about to join us. We're going to need to take a break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. This is listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Jane Irvin from Community Services for Children, Marcy Ronald from United Way. Stick with us.
To the manger, see the little stranger wrapped in swaddling. Oh, the Prince of Peace. The wheels start turning, torches start burning, and behold, wise men journey from the east. How a little baby boy bring the people so much joy. Son of a carpenter, Mary carried the light. This must be Christmas, must be tonight. A shepherd on the hillside.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News. One of the great things about public radio is that the people who use the service are the people who are the largest sources of support for the service, which is how you know it acts in your interest. Help get the WDIY fund drive off to a great start. You can help WDIY pay for the news that you enjoy every day by making your contribution today at WDIY.org. Thanks.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater, presenting Christmas City Follies Thursday, December 5th through the 22nd at Touchstone Theater. A Bethlehem holiday tradition, this Touchstone Theater Ensemble created classic yet again reimagines what the holidays are all about with music, wit, and holiday hijinks. For information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
You might just want to ask her with my presents, ain't Nick? So think a little about the people minus money. And when you get your dough, why don't you show some kindness, honey? Go ahead, get fed, and spread a little love. Give what you can afford, just like the Lord from up above. A quote, a note, and one you won't believe. It's better to give than to receive. Yo, it's Christmas, no distance. Listen, all you listeners. Think of all the business that's in prison during Christmas. Not trying to bring you down, but trying to put you up on. I'm laying it on the table so you're able to put your cup on. No snow, not a flurry, so hurry, don't you miss it. Not dissing you, but wishing you a very Merry Christmas.
Give up the dough, give up the dough, give up the dough on Christmas, yo. Give up the dough, give up the dough, give up the dough. Here we go, here we go.
I'm from the ghetto. Does this mean I get no toys or presents beneath my...
You got to dig Run DMC, and they have a perspective on Christmas that might be different from a lot of people's, not from mine. Marcy Ronald has joined us. Marcy Ronald has a really cool job title. It's called Vice President for Community Impact, and that's at the United Way. Marcy, welcome. Hope you didn't have a heart attack or anything, or you okay over there?
I'm fine.
Thanks for joining us. You're probably all stressed out from you know, getting stuck in traffic and everything. So
there are things we can change and things we can't. Might as well just accept it.
Let's talk for a minute about what it means to be a vice president for community impact. I mean, because I think this is really the key sale that the United Way makes to donors these days.
Yeah,
is to talk about, you know, the impact people's donations are having.
Yeah,
okay, talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, well, United Way is, you know, over 120 years ago. Were formed as a way of creating a united way of fundraising in communities across the country. And today, the United Way network is about 1,800 strong, of which our United Way is actually in the top 40 in the country. And part of that is because of our fundraising, but a big part of that is because of the impact the impact model that we've embraced and has been embraced for about 7 or 8 years now. And what that really means is moving away from an allocations process where we just serve as a conduit of dollars to really taking a look at what are the social conditions, what are the issues that matter to our community, and how do we invest in programs and services that can make a difference in those issues. So So what that merely means is, you know, it's part of my role is along with the team of volunteers and staff that we have in our organization is to really take a look at those issues and then to take a look at what are some of the best practices, what are some of the strategies that we know that can make a difference to address those issues, and then to invest donor dollars in that, as well as to design some method of accountability so that we can all take a look at the overall return on investment over time.
Okay, and so the United Way has essentially, I think, four categories of you know, kind of emphasis. They are children being ready for school. There's a second children's one.
We have really three focus areas, education, and there are three focuses in education. Early childhood education, so helping kids to get ready for school, ready to learn. The second is providing support for students K through 12. And, you know, we know that, you know, kids begin to make decisions about whether they want to even stay in school as early as fifth and sixth grade, that there's a, you know, a process for dropping out that begins, a mindset that begins very early. So how do we provide intervention and support for kiddos who may be on that path? And then a third area in education is providing support for families. So education, transportation, those kind of mental health support, those behavioral health, those kind of things that we know that families need. The second area of focus is older adults, and our third is in basic needs. But our primary focus, over 70% of our investment now goes into education.
So you have a little bit of qualifications to talk about children's issues.
Yep.
Which is why you're here. Thanks for being here. So do you have some kind of like baseline data? I mean, do you have like the stuff that you rattle off to shock people about the status of children in our society? Do you have that kind of thing? I mean, do you have like a bunch of things that whack people upside the head, and if they're not responsive, they might not have a pulse?
You know, we always say without the data, the chatter don't matter. So, you know, we take a look at, you know, what
I say, data drives the movement. So we're on the same kind of.
Or they say, you know, in God we trust, but everyone else must bring data. we could do a comedy show, Alan.
Good, except you're much more funny than I am.
But when we're talking about such a serious issue related to kids in our community, you know, looking at the fact that about 50% of children living in Allentown are living in poverty. 600 children.
Let's just make sure we're clear on what you just said. You said 50.
50?
50%.
Half. There's just no excuse for that in this country.
There are over 7,000 children in the Lehigh Valley that live at 100% of the poverty line.
Yeah.
100%. That's very, very low income. 7,000 kids.
And just to put that into perspective, a $22,000 income for a family of four. And the fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment in the Lehigh Valley, which you could only get a family of four into if you're lucky, if you had three kids of the same gender, I guess, would require an income, assuming that the definition of affordability is a third of your income, would require a household income of $37,000. And obviously $22,000 falls just a little short of that number.
Well, I mean, you look at something like, we've been looking at some data recently about food security, knowing that, you know, federal funding for SNAP, you know, is changing, and which is, you know, food stamps. And knowing that there are, you know, just looking at some of the data that's out there, about 80,000 people are food insecure in the Lehigh Valley. About half of those, about 45%, are people that are about 200% above the poverty line. So what does that mean? We're talking about working families. We're talking about the working poor. And so when you talk about children's issues, we're talking about hunger. We're talking about the fact that in one district, 600 children started the school year this year homeless.
It's
those are the statistics that are so sobering.
And people don't know. I mean, just some statistics on the welfare system. There are about 7,000 people in the two counties who are on temporary assistance for needing family. That's less than 1% of the population out of 630,000 people. You ask people that question when you get an audience, and some people think like 30% of the population is on welfare. It's under 1%.
Yeah.
Their household income per month for a family of three will be $403 a month. That has not gone up since January of 1985. The average size of the family is 2.1 people, not 2.1 children, 2.1 people. People exert a lot of energy hating welfare and hating poor people because they don't know the facts.
Yep.
The reality is the vast majority of people who are poor are working.
Yep.
Something like 27% of the homeless adults in Lehigh Valley are working. They go home to a shelter from a job.
Yep. Yep. I think there's a lot of image around what homelessness looks like, you know, the face of that. But we're talking about people who are staying in couches, staying at a friend's home, you know, who are trying to, you know, stay in their car. I mean, it's a variety of, you know, in hotels and motels. There's the economic perspective. There's what's happening in the welfare system, but also in children's services. We were talking with one of our colleagues at, you know, who's, you know, a leader in the children and youth arena, and hearing that recently, over the last year, they've had 100% increase in referrals for kiddos who are living in dealing with unfavorable situations in their home, abusive situations.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I get to do this once a month, sometimes more. I love it. Appreciate the opportunity. I could thank Neil Heaver, who is the guy that runs program for WDIY. I've known him for many years. He's got a very hip music collection, and he is unfortunately working overtime tonight in order to work that gadgetry over there, lights and gadgets and buttons and stuff like that. And so, Neil, thanks for that. My guest tonight, Marcy Ronald from the United Way, Jane Irvin from Community Services for Children. Jane, you've been a little vocal lately. I saw a great, hope it ends up as the quote of the week. You said in defense of early childhood education that I think it was something like, I can't think of a dumber way to save money than to cut early childhood education. Go ahead, give it to us.
All right, you asked for it. If you think about the fact that baby boomers are retiring out of the workforce at an incredible rate, we are going to need a well-educated workforce for the businesses of the United States, of the state of Pennsylvania, of the Lehigh Valley, to thrive into the future. Most of the jobs that are going to become available as we go into the future are high-skill jobs. There aren't any more jobs.
Or low pay.
true. There aren't really very many jobs out there that require simply brawn, just muscles, just back-breaking work, because that can be done by robots. What we need are people who are educated using their brains. If we're ever going to compete with countries across the world, and we are now in a global economy, and we are competing. So the best way to ensure a well-educated workforce for our businesses, which will help the United States stay competitive in the world economy, is to start with the youngest children and get them at the highest levels of education possible. Children's brains develop from the time they're born up until around 5 years old, after which new neurons aren't being formed as rapidly as they are when the children are, especially between 0 and 18 months old. So that's the perfect time to really make sure that children have high quality learning going on, that they're learning colors, shapes, how to use a pencil, how to count. One of the greatest predictors of success in school is children's ability in math when they enter kindergarten. So by reducing funding at those young ages, it makes no sense at all, because we're simply hurting the future workforce. And, you know, these four-year-old kids, it's only 15 years before they're going to be in the workforce. It's a very short time. And companies do strategic planning, long-range planning, that go out 10 and 15 years. So the best money that I can think of to invest in the future is to invest it with very young children.
Testosterone is essentially becoming obsolete in the workforce. That's one thing that's real clear.
That's interesting. You know, I hadn't thought of it that way.
You know, the hunter-gatherer part of, you know, what guys were supposed to be about, you know, that's really past. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is very cool is that people like us are not talking anymore so much about the morality of the argument. You know, we're talking about the economics of the argument. You just made a pitch based on, you know, issues that are in everybody's best interest. You know, it's one thing to get somebody to say, you know, to say to somebody, don't you care about your neighbors? You know, don't you have a heart? Don't you have, you know, any sense of decency, man? Now, you know, the arguments that we're making are about, you know, their own special interest. If you want to make money making toasters, then people better be able to afford to buy toasters.
Are
people listening?
Yeah.
Are people listening? So we've got a Congress that is, you know, trying our souls and our patience every day, as you well know. Early childhood education has been cut more than once, but a budget deal has been made. They put a lot more money back in. And maybe it's because of your brilliant op-ed piece.
Let me correct you for just a second. They didn't put a whole lot of money back in. They stopped the sequester from going forward.
Okay, good.
Okay,
good point.
So that doesn't mean there's more money. That means they're not going to cut anymore, at least this year and next year. But it does buy us some time. If the sequester had gone into effect, it had stayed in effect. And, of course, it hasn't been passed by the House and the Senate yet, so we're not positive it's going to go through yet.
That's a good point. But it's a deal among the leaders of the branches.
Correct, but it still has to be voted on by the members. So if that had not happened, or if it doesn't get approved, then even this year we lost 80 kids of those that we serve. Next year we'll lose an additional 88. The year after that, we'll lose approximately 80 again. And on and on and on up to 2021, where about 48% of our program will have been eliminated due to sequester cuts.
And then Marcy, Jane hands them off to the school system, and the United Way inserts itself into the school system through a series of interventions directly into the public school system. Do you want to talk about some of those kinds of things, your community schools and those kinds of things?
Well, Jane and I are in partnership
in
the Promise Neighborhoods, in the Allentown Promise Neighborhood, looking at creating more spots for kiddos to be enrolled in early childhood education, as well as some home visitation work that's happening with a signature program with CSC. And then, you know, from a K-12 perspective, you know, really looking at building that pipeline up through 12th grade. So that pipeline of support. So we're talking about kindergarten through 12th graders. So the types of interventions we're talking about are things like community schools, where we transform the entire school into the hub of the neighborhood, organizing a variety of social services and intervention type support for students and their families. And so, you know, high quality after school programs. We know that children who live in poverty need an additional 50 hours of high quality enrichment activity outside of the classroom per week to compete with their wealthier peers. So what we're talking about is that you can't just learn in the classroom. You have to have an experiential opportunity. You have to have other opportunities to connect that learning to something. So who provides that? You know, what parent can afford who's, you know, living in, you know, an area that's, you know, that's struggling? What parent can afford, you know, dance classes and art and music and theater and those kinds of things to tap into kids' assets and off, you know, activate a different part of their brain? So, you know, community schools is one, also some of our program investments.
Let me talk about something that's a little sensitive. This is not intended to pick on you at the United Way, because God knows you got a challenge in front of you. But the United Way, it seems to me that you've been sort of stuck in the $10 or $11 million a year goal for, like, it's got to be 5 or 6 years now. Mm-hmm. I recently talked to Dave Lewis, your CEO, and mm-hmm. and he's corrected me and said, no, we're up to $11 million goal, which means that, you know, while all these funding streams are being cut, you know, we need to, you know, can we rely on charitable giving? You know, what's clear to me is that, you know, there isn't. And those people who think it's okay to cut government spending because private philanthropy will take over. Mm. I mean, I think that's a classic explanation for how that's just not realistic. Mm. Because you don't, and I think more and more people are designating their contributions. And so I'm guessing the amount of money that you have to put into those youth-educated education initiatives is not anywhere near where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly workplace campaigns have changed over the years. And so, you know, there are less people in workplaces. And giving and how donors choose where they want their dollars to go has changed. And so our United Way needs to change and is changing and to be responsive to what donor need is. But I would say that, you know, you're right. I mean, this year our goal is over $11 million. Our campaign's led by just an incredible team of folks.
Paul Farr at PPL, an extraordinarily generous, very community-minded guy.
And humble, just amazing.
Yeah, he's pretty remarkable.
He is pretty remarkable, and I think he's going to break the highest record we've ever had this year. But I think that, you know, in response to those challenges, we need to be introducing new products to donors. We need to be introducing new opportunities for, you know, them to be attracted, but also to really fully understand what the issues are and how, you know,
splitting
up your
bulk. We've got to find better ways to prick people's consciences.
Absolutely.
You know? That's what I try to do here. I don't know if I'm very good at it, but we got to take a break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. By the way, you should send in your pledge. My guests tonight are Jane Irvin from Community Services for Children, Marcy Ronald from United Way. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Stick around.
She was his girl, he was her boyfriend. She'd be his wife and make him a husband. A surprise on the way, and a day and a day. One healthy little giggling, trembling baby boy. The wise men came, three made their way to shower him with love while he lay in the hay. Shower him with love, love, love.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News, reminding you that WDIY is a radio station that's in this community and that is part of this community and that is supported by this community, which is exactly the way that it should be. The people who use this service are the largest single sources of support for it, which is how you know that it's independent. That's how you know that it's acting in your interest. That's how you know that WDIY is working to bring reliable information to you. So please make your donation today. With your help, WDIY can pay for the news and keep fund drives short. Visit WDIY.org and please give as generously as you can. Thanks.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Hitch up your reindeer, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Fill every stocking you find, the kids are gonna love you so. Leave a toy for Johnny, leave a doll for Mary, leave something pretty for Donnie, and don't forget about Gary. Santa Claus.
It's James Brown. You gotta love James Brown. But it's really not funny. The differential of wealth and poverty among our communities is stunning. Brown versus Board of Education decided in 1954 that basically got rid of apartheid in education and did things like forced busing and so on. It never happened for all intents and purposes. How we segregate our communities has become much more sophisticated. We have very crafty tools like land use planning. And what we do, or what the consequence is that you could be as much as 25 times more likely to be poor depending on what community you were born into. There is something terribly wrong with that. I grew up in Lower Macungie Township, and I'm afraid to have to admit that we blazed that trail. We were the first family to move into the first subdivision in what is now one of the richest townships in Pennsylvania. There is indeed a factor of 25 times more likely to be poor depending on where you live. So, Marcy, does the United Way investments in the schools, I'm assuming it's focused in our three urban school districts.
It is, and as well as in the Slate Belt. We know that in the Slate Belt there's tremendous need as well. So we take a look at geography as well and take a look at how we can transform that neighborhood and that neighborhood that child lives in and the schools that are in that neighborhood. From a geographical perspective as well.
Jane, where do your kids come from?
They do mostly come from the cities, but there is a significant amount of what we call the rural poor. Marcy mentioned the Slate Belt, but there are others, and but obviously most unfortunately come from the city of Allentown.
Just getting back to the government funding issue, Marcy, I think a lot of people have this sort of romantic notion that the good old days, we didn't have all these government spending programs and we took care of ourselves and the problems went away and life was happy. And I'm not sure when it was that our world was so perfect, but it certainly hasn't been in my lifetime. Your United Way agencies, how many of them, you probably don't know this off the top of your head, but just roughly, what percentage of them do what they do without government money?
Oh, gosh. I'd say less than half. I mean, if I were to take a guess,
So United Way funding kind of complements.
It does.
Government funding.
It does.
It's not the other way around.
And we've seen it just in the last. In the last few years, you know, what happens is, you know, some of that funding, you know, goes away. And so then they have to cut back on some type of service or support. And either they need to lean more on the funding that we provide, you know, that's provided through the United Way, or to find other, you know, two or three other donor sources to make up that funding. Or, you know, we've seen lots of agencies need to cut back on some of the funding programming, as well as just lengthen their waiting lists for people to get in to, you know, get some of the services that are needed for them. So,
Jane, I'm guessing that the phenomenal number of kids that you're serving are the vast majority of your funding is coming from public funding sources.
Yeah, about 92%.
Okay.
So, yes, without government funding, both state and federal, we would not be able to operate the way we're operating now. It is very challenging. But, you know, there was a time when people thought that the government created problems and didn't solve problems. And I would have to say that is just flat out wrong. Government does a lot of good and very important things in any community, whether it's local governments, school districts as governments, or the state or federal government. Mm. If you think about the amount of tax dollars that are used to educate children, to fix roads and bridges, to...
Or not.
As the case may be. But the point is that there's an awful lot of good, important things that government does. People don't want to pay taxes, but they sure as heck don't want their services to be cut either. So it's a conundrum, and I think people need to come to the realization that in order to have a high quality of life in a community, it isn't free.
Mm. Jane, I don't know if you're willing to get into this, and stop me if you're not. But last time I checked, you're a Republican.
Correct.
And you know, you sound like a pretty normal person to me. Some of my best friends are Republicans, and you know, the soul of America is being tried right now in the Republican Party. I think the Democratic Party in the 1980s figured out that it needs to be careful to not let its more radical elements control the party. You know, I'm kind of one of those radicals, and you know, but I also understand what it takes to get things accomplished. I think the Democratic Party learned a lot from that experience. I think the Republican Party is going through a period right now where it is a wrenching debate, you know, over the soul of the party and what it means to be a Republican. Do you go ahead?
You know, it's very frustrating. The Republican Party of today is not the Republican Party that I joined and was part of for so many years. It's completely different. Being a moderate is considered anathema to the Republican Party at this point in time. And I honestly, I think there's a lot that can be blamed on the rhetoric of right-wing talk radio, for example, that gives people a feeling that, well, if they can say it on the radio, then I can say it over and over again in my community. And I just think people aren't as just polite and cautious about the words they use because of how the vitriolic and how hateful some of the comments are that you hear on talk radio. I'm still a Republican, Alan. I haven't changed because I'm not going to give up on the party. We need a two-party system in the United States. We need to have both, you know, there are good points that both parties bring. And if one is crashes and burns, that I'm, as I'm afraid the Republicans may do if they don't get their act together, then I think that's a very sad time for the government. Mm. So I think it's important that the Republicans get their act together, pull themselves closer to the middle, and as the Democrats did, stop paying attention to their radical right-wingers in the party.
It's so refreshing to hear, and you know, it's pretty clear to me that the party cannot be a party of white men on the extreme edge. And, you know, whether they're going to be able to bust out of the hold, the kind of headlock that element has on the party remains to be seen. I certainly want to do all I can to support the more moderate wing of the Republican Party. I've been voting more Republican, believe it or not.
My goodness.
I have, and I'm not afraid to say that. And you know, because when it comes right down to it, we got to get the job done, and we can't get the job done when you got you know, people with some of the crazy ideas they've got. Is there a consensus among children's advocates in the Lehigh Valley about what needs to be done? I mean, is the Children's Coalition, for example, is that still getting together? Are they still speaking out with a singular voice on behalf of children?
At this point, the Children's Coalition is evolving, and I think there are so many other – nobody wants to duplicate what's going on. And there are a lot of initiatives that are going on out there, and different members of the Children's Coalition are involved in them, but not necessarily as the voice of a single coalition. But there's the Lehigh Valley Early Learning Investment Coalition, which are business folks who are focused on making sure that all children in the Lehigh Valley have at least 1 year of high-quality early learning before they start public school. That's going to improve the curriculum in the public schools, because these kids are going to come to school ready to learn and on age developmentally. So that's going on out there right now, and I know United Way has been very, very supportive of that initiative.
Are there like three or five like core, you know, consensus points that we could make an argument for on behalf of kids in Lehigh Valley?
You know, it's funny. Jane and I saw each other recently and said, it sort of feels like some of the stars are aligning around some children's issues in the community. And it seems like, you know, there's a great amount of consensus that we need to work together to ensure as many children as possible are prepared for kindergarten, that have at least 1 year of early childhood education, if not more, and that we have some standards, and that we're working on more spots, more quality spots for kiddos to get ready for kindergarten. And then the next, you know, sort of place is that we need to ensure that there are as many children as possible who are reading on grade level by third grade, the end of third grade. You learn to read up until third grade, and then you read to learn after. And third grade reading is such a key predictor for success academically for the rest of your academic career, that it is so critical. And so we're hearing from a lot of groups. We're convening an education forum group with folks cross-sector across the valley, and there's growing consensus around that indicator as well. Also, STEM is getting a lot of traction and a lot of support. So science, technology, education, and math.
Engineering
and math, sorry. And I'm even hearing that there's an art piece in there now a little bit. So
STEAM?
STEAM, uh-huh.
Really?
I've heard a little bit of that. Right,
God,
Jane?
I'm a
right?
genius, so, man. I can't believe I came up with that.
But so science, technology, engineering, and math. And so there's a lot of traction for that happening around the community as well. So there are, you know, I would say three or four or five different rallying cries beginning to happen around the community.
Yeah. And you know, interestingly, Alan, a lot of this is being driven by business community.
Yeah.
Who are focused on the fact that they need to have high quality employees.
I think the business community in Lehigh Valley is extraordinarily progressive. They've been so strong on so many different issues. I think it's one of the joys of doing the work that we do in Lehigh Valley is that we've got business leadership that's so progressive and interested in these issues.
You're so right. You're right.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are Jane Irvin, two friends, by the way. Jane Irvin, who, what are you, like president and CEO at the Is that what they call you?
Yeah.
What the heck does that mean?
They call me Jane.
Yeah, I call you Jane. I love you, Jane. But what the heck is a president and CEO? I mean, what do you get that?
I don't know. It's just a title. It means nothing.
And Marcy Ronald, who's vice president for community impact with the United Way, I lost my train of thought. I don't think I've ever done this.
Oh, no.
You're talking about how much you love us.
I do, but that's once I say I love you, I'm sort of done with that. Okay, I know where I was going. Are there things that you really would like to do that you can't get to because you're doing everything you can just to sustain current services?
Absolutely. We'd like to serve every child in the Lehigh Valley. We'd like to have a high-quality preschool for every child in the Lehigh Valley, and we haven't been able to do it. It's an overwhelming task, and the cost is very – it would be high if we were to try to do that. So we've got to come up with different models of how
– Can you tell me what the percentage of kids that you serve – that are eligible you're actually serving? Do you know that number off the top of your head? You used to have that.
We serve, depending on the different communities, but it's in the neighborhood of 25% of the children
who
are
kids.
Eligible. That means that they're at 100% of poverty.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you could be at 105% of poverty, and you're not in that figure.
We were just looking at some numbers in early childhood, and just in three neighborhoods across the valley, you know, one in Easton, one in South Bethlehem, and one in Allentown. And looking at 61% of kiddos are not ready for kindergarten in those neighborhoods. 61%. And so when you think about that pipeline, if well over half are not ready when they get into the pipeline, you know, and then the type of support and intervention it takes to get them, you know, to meet the next benchmark is tremendous. So,
you know, say what you will about the parents, say what you will about the adults. If you want to believe that everybody who's poor is poor because they're slouches, they're slackers, they're lazy, they don't want to work, you want to believe that, you can't, I mean, it's hard to imagine when you could believe that, but if you want to, that's one thing. But to throw the kids in there with that population and, you know, and to argue that the kids are somehow guilty, that they're not just purely innocent little precious jewels that we need to nurture in every way we can is really pathetic. We're running out of time. I want to thank both of you, Marcy Ronald, the Vice President for Community Impact, coolest job title I think I've ever heard at the United Way. Jane Irvin, uppity president and CEO of the Community Services for Children. Both women doing extraordinary work on behalf of our community, on behalf of our kids, and on behalf of our future. I'm going to leave you with one last song. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you in the new year.
From all of us to all of you, very Merry Christmas. And at this joyful time of year, we want you to be with us. So gather round our lovely tree where all the lights are shining. We'll be as happy as can be while all of the bells are chiming. Ding dong dingle, what a merry sound. Ding dong dingle, Kris Kringle is in town. And now I'll introduce you to the gang that's here to meet you. The happy house of Mickey Mouse is waiting here to greet you.
Ha ha! Hi, folks! Merry Christmas!
Happy New Year, too!
Ha ha! Merry, Merry Christmas!
From all of us to you, from all of us to all of you, can't wait until you're with us. We'll meet beneath the mistletoe and say, amen.